This is Piedmont Arts. I'm David Borex. Johann Sebastian Bach and George Gershwin are brand name composers. Bach during classical music's Baroque era in the 18th century, and Gershwin 200 years later. This week on Piedmont Arts, we'll be talking about both men as they're celebrated here in our area. The Western Piedmont Symphony takes note of the 100th anniversary of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, with a Masterwork Series concert in Hickory. We'll hear from music director Matthew Troy and guest pianist Jeffrey Beagle, who will play a new piece he commissioned to honor Rhapsody in Blue.
I wanted to celebrate it, though, with a living composer writing something new that would reflect America and music since Gershwin's time.
Beagle talks about that new piece, Peter Boyer's Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue, just ahead. And later, the annual Charlotte Bach Festival returns this Friday, May 30th, and runs through June 7th at various locations around Charlotte. We'll get a preview of the festival offerings from one of the artistic directors, violinist Aislinn Noske. And sandwiched between this week's segments is Fanfare, Phil Vavra's weekly look ahead at coming arts events across the Piedmont. That's all here on the Piedmont Arts Podcast from WDAV. ...2024 was the 100th anniversary of George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. It's a flowing, jazzy, and bluesy celebration of American music. New York-based pianist Jeffrey Beagle wanted to mark the anniversary not just by playing Rhapsody, but by commissioning a new work by a living composer to honor it. Over the past year, he's played Peter Boyer's Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue all around the country with a goal of hitting all 50 states. His visit to Western Piedmont Symphony brings him one state closer. In an interview that also included Western Piedmont Symphony director Matthew Troy, Beagle talked about how the big anniversary inspired him.
I've been doing these commissioning projects for about 25 years, and I realized in 2017 or so that the Gershwin Centennial of Rhapsody in Blue would be coming up, but I figured, well, you got 7 years. So then by late 2019, I thought I'd really better, this is before COVID, I thought this is kind of the time I better start getting the wheels turning on this. And I wanted to celebrate it, though, with a living composer writing something new that would reflect America and music since Gershwin's time. And I approached a few composers who they all said no because they just thought it was a little bit too overwhelming a project to do.
Trying to do something that reflects on this classic of 20th century American music, right?
Exactly. Well, I went to Peter Boyer, and he initially said, no. He says, I don't want to be compared to Gershwin. I said, well, you won't be. He says, yes, I will be. And I said, well, think of this. When Gershwin wanted to improve his orchestrations, he went to study with Maurice Ravel in Paris, and Maurice Ravel said to him, you know, I hear you make a lot more money than I do. I should study with you. But he said, you should think of being a first-rate Gershwin and not a second-rate Ravel. I said, well, Peter, why don't you just think of being a first-rate Boyer and not a second-rate Gershwin? You know, and he took it on. And then I gave it a title, Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue, and I wanted to just talk about America, just from the past to the present and to the future, just using the flag as the focus of the piece rather than anything else.
Yeah. Well, describe the piece for us.
The piece kind of is like, it's a tip of the hat to Gershwin. You hear the Charleston rhythms and you hear some jazz, blues things, but it's also a reflection of music from the time of Gershwin forward. So you'll hear kind of jazz combo sections like piano, string bass, and drums, kind of like Claude Bowling and Vince Guaraldi from the 50s, 60s, 70s mostly. And then you get the cinematic gorgeous E major theme. I mean, even Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue in E major, that luscious theme that everybody knows that became United Airlines theme, of course, which was not what he originally wrote. That's another interview we could have. Anyway, Peter's is more cinematic because motion pictures and movie soundtracks became very popular in the 40s and 50s, and the sprawling, gorgeous widescreen music scores that the great Hollywood composers wrote. Peter loves that style, and he created something very original, very beautiful, very reflective and poignant. And it's an all-encompassing piece that really embraces everybody in America, be them the musicians in the orchestras, the conductors, the donors, Everybody that's been part of the project really has a proud moment in this piece. But the music itself reflects the American soul in each person who's either native of here or who has come from another country and rerouted their lives in America. It's a beautiful piece, very powerful, very powerful.
At this point, the Western Piedmont Symphony is the only orchestra in North Carolina involved with Beagle's Rhapsody Initiative. Matthew, how did the symphony come to be engaged with this project?
Well, Jeffrey is such a great communicator. And so Jeffrey really contacted me and spearheaded this idea. And as he described it, I thought it would be a really nice fit for our orchestra. I've also been familiar with Peter Boyer's music for a while now and just really love Peter's distinctly American sound in his music. And a few years ago, we performed Peter's work, Ellis Island, The Dream of America, which is probably Peter's most popular work. And so Peter's music is just, I think, imbued with that kind of sense of the American spirit. He has a wonderful knack for, I think, also weaving in popular kind of genres into what Peter does. As Jeffrey mentioned, these kind of jazz or blues elements that are in the concerto. And so for me, when Jeffrey approached me about it, and once I got to know that Peter Boyer was involved, it seemed like a no-brainer for us to feature Jeffrey in this piece.
Well, it sounds like an exciting piece and an exciting concert. Jeffrey and Matthew, thank you so much for joining us here on the Piedmont Arts Podcast.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
Also on the program with the two Rhapsody pieces are the Symphony No. 1 by living American composer Adolphus Hailstork and Maurice Ravel's fan favorite Bolero. And just a reminder, the Western Piedmont Symphony's Masterworks Rhapsody in Blue concert is Saturday, June 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Monroe Auditorium at Lenoir Rhine University in Hickory. Tickets are at wpsymphony.org. Now it's time for Phil Vavra's Fanfare, a weekly look at what's happening in the arts around the Piedmont. Phil?
Well, thank you. As we slide into summer, you may be thinking about escaping to the beach, but don't be too quick to head for the coast because the calendar is filling up with major musical events further inland. Plus, no sharks. Let's fanfare. Bach Academy Charlotte's annual Charlotte Bach Festival returns for 9 days of enticing Baroque and classical performances at Queen's University's Sandra Levine Theater and venues throughout the city, May 30th through June 7th. This year's event is also seasoned with a few Mozartian additions. It all begins at Independent Picture House with a special Friday night screening of Milos Forman's Amadeus. And the festival continues with performances of J.S. Bach's complete Brandenburg Concertos, Mozart's Requiem, and much, much more. One of my favorite southeastern cities is Greenville, South Carolina. The downtown is very attractive with its river, waterfalls, and minor league ballpark. It's easy to get around by car, bike, or on foot, and has some great places to eat and drink. The free Greenville Jazz Festival is the perfect excuse to get down there and explore. The two-day event along Main Street will feature New Orleans jazz, big band, Latin jazz, and more, plus local food trucks and drink tents. It's May 30th and 31st. Two Charlotte area vocal ensembles will be in action this weekend. Caritas A Cappella Ensemble performs Love Songs of Old and New, featuring Renaissance and Modern Madrigals at 7 p.m. on Saturday, May 31st at Christ Episcopal Church. Tickets are $30 in advance, $35 at the door, $5 for students. And Charlotte Chamber Choir will perform Music from the Heartland, American Music by American Composers, Saturday, May 31st at 3:30 p.m. at South Mecklenburg Presbyterian Church and Sunday, June 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Davidson College Presbyterian Church. The concerts are free, but donations are gratefully accepted via Venmo. Finally, the 12-week Brevard Music Center Summer Festival gets going this weekend with over 80 live performances in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Everything from symphonic masterpieces and chamber concerts to jazz, bluegrass, and a fully staged opera. This year's festival also includes a special performance of Jurassic Park with live orchestra, as well as a tribute to ABBA, May 31st through August 24th in Brevard, North Carolina. I'll have more sounds, sights, and bites for you again next week, and you can read Fanfare anytime at WDAV.org. Back to you.
Thanks, Phil. As you mentioned, Bach Academy Charlotte's 2025 Charlotte Bach Festival is happening May 30th through June 7th around the city. Let's take a closer look. This year, the festival is bookended by concerts of the complete Brandenburg Concertos and Mozart's Requiem. In between are recitals, chamber performances, Bach cantatas, and more. WDAV's Rachel Stewart spoke with Bach Academy co-artistic director Aislinn Noski about the festival, including how she and her colleague Guy Fishman plan and carry out such a large and complex musical experience.
We want to have to create a festival that is a really, really fun and moving experience for both the performers and the audience members and all of the staff and volunteers who make it happen. By that, I mean music that's going to feel satisfying to play and hear. Taking that into account, we like to have contrast throughout the festival in terms of scale, mood. Even though we're a Bach festival, we do like to have contrast in other composers other than Bach, people who might have been known to Bach or knew Bach or worked at the same time as Bach, to bring a little variety to the table. And so taking logistics into account of who can come to town when and be available when, there's another big piece of the pie to sort out. And then both Guy and I try to look at the week that's a little over a week long festival as a sort of journey, and we'd like it to have some kind of narrative arc. We start with a bang, quite a splash with the complete Brandenburg concertos by Bach. They're very complicated, elaborate to pull off. Throughout the following week, there's different levels of intimacy in chamber music concerts, from a solo concerts to trio sonata concerts to some cantata performances. And then we end again with a different kind of bang at the end with the grandeur of the Mozart Requiem.
So talk a little bit about having the Mozart Requiem as part of the Bach Festival. You said that you like to bring in music by people who were either known to Bach or influenced by Bach or, you know, what have you. What's the connection for Mozart?
Yeah, the connection in this instance is that the Bach family, Johann Sebastian Bach and his sons, were known to most composers in Europe at that time. Their work was held in extremely high regard, and Mozart's no exception to that. He would definitely have been aware of Bach's music. I think one reason it was interesting for us to think of presenting the Requiem this particular year is that there's a fun anniversary of, it's the 40th anniversary of the movie Amadeus, the fictional account, but very entertaining account of part of Mozart's interesting life. And we have a connection at the festival to the movie Amadeus, and that our keyboardist Ian Watson plays on the soundtrack of that movie. So it's very special. And so the representation, having Mozart Requiem at the festival, is really speaking to Bach's influence on the greater musical scape of Europe at that time.
You're also going to have some music by Haydn in one of your concerts, right? Aren't you doing a violin concerto?
Yes, that's correct. The last concert, there'll be a sort of a whetting your appetite moment before we do the Requiem. I'm going to play the Haydn violin concerto in G major, which is really special for me to be able to bring that to Charlotte, because Haydn is really near and dear to my heart as one of my favorite composers. And I've been incredibly fortunate to make a recording of that particular piece with the Handel and the Haydn Society in Boston. And I've loved it since I was a tiny child learning to play the violin. So it's really special. And, you know, there's no direct connection between that piece and the Requiem. For sure, Haydn and Mozart they were aware of each other, and they were great admirers of each other. But I chose that because I wanted to have something that was quite contrasting in mood to the Requiem, which is serious and, I mean, almost indescribably so epic. And the Haydn concerto is really a few minutes of really happiness. And I think it'll just set the scene for us to then go into a very dark, potentially emotional place with the grand scale work of the Requiem.
You are responsible for one or two concerts, I think, in the festival.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you want to talk about those? Give us a little insight into what they're like?
Sure. Yeah, the Haydn concerto will be on the final concert. The main focus of that will be the Mozart Requiem. And on a separate concert earlier in the week, I will be doing a program of trio sonatas on which we focus heavily on the music of Antonio Vivaldi. There's still Bach on that. There are a couple of Bach trio sonatas as well, but I wanted to have some kind of chamber music that wasn't Bach that might be interestingly connected to Bach. And there is a connection between Vivaldi and Bach. We know that Bach admired Vivaldi's work because in at least four instances that we know of, Bach took the time to copy out in his own hand different concertos by Vivaldi. you know, you don't have to be a Bach scholar to know that he didn't have much spare time. We don't even know how he got all of the work he needed to do done in terms of composing and teaching and taking care of the musical life of Leipzig. But he took the time, which was so precious, his own time, to write these out by hand. And that's one way, of course, to be able to perform them yourself, since there were no photocopiers around. But it was also a way for composers of the time to get to know other composers' music. And I just don't believe Bach would have had time for something in that way that he didn't hold in high esteem. Some scholars think that you can tell in Bach's output where he starts to be much more exposed to Italian virtuosic, especially instrumental writing. Bach's music becomes, I don't want to say Italian, but maybe more, a little more Italian in flavor than it was before. And I wanted to highlight that there is that kind of influence in between Bach and Vivaldi in that trio sonata program.
I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about the Brandenburg concert. You're going to do all six of them in one go?
Correct. We will take a brief intermission, which will be very well needed for hydration and resting. All six of them. It's quite a tour de force for any group to undertake. And I'm so humbled that I get to do this at all in my career. And the very idea that I get to do it more than once, I've played them in Boston with the Handel and Haydn Society, and the fact that I get to bring them to Charlotte, which is my musical home away from home, it's making me pinch myself. You know, there are people who work in as professional early music performers who never have the chance to perform all of them at once because it's just so difficult logistically to get everyone in one place and to solve all those practical issues. I will say, we're pretty sure they weren't meant to be played all at once. I'm so glad that we do, because it's really fun, and the audience seems to really enjoy it. We always get a great response, but actually, it's pretty clear he didn't write them as a cycle in terms of the way they should be performed. He collected them to present to somebody he wanted to get a job from, essentially, in Brandenburg, and I don't think it was necessarily on his mind how they should be performed.
Can you talk a little bit then about the Requiem, just a little bit more? I understand you're going conductorless with it. And also, because Bach Academy really focuses on a performance that's informed by the period, right, in which the music was created, is there anything that you do differently performing Mozart in that way? I mean, we hear a lot about how Baroque music gets performed slightly differently, different instrument, a little bit different bow or whatever, but you never really hear people talk about authentic period performances of Mozart. And I don't know if you guys are trying to do something like that in this case or what.
It is one of our mandates at Bach Academy Charlotte to try to present the music as closely to what the composer was trying to bring to life as possible. And the most obvious way to do that is to use the instruments that the composer was aware of, and usually they played them themselves. And in the case of the vocalists, they use performing techniques from the 18th century, having carefully studied. So the principles of that way of music making are the same to us, whether it's Bach or Mozart. What starts to happen is, of course, the instruments change a little bit. The Requiem features two very interesting instruments, basset horns, which are a type of clarinet, and those really hadn't been invented yet in Bach's time. I mean, there might have been a, you know, prototype rolling around out there that was hard to manage and ungainly to play, but by the time Mozart got around to his Requiem, those were actually really highly developed types of clarinets. There's a really gorgeous earthy tone that they bring to the table that wouldn't have been available to someone like Bach. And this is why we go to all this trouble to use these old instruments, because these considerations become so interesting to think about, and they inform the way we perform, the way we play, and the way we sing. And you mentioned that we're going to be doing this without a conductor, and I will be doing personally a little bit of directing with my body, with my arms. Certainly we will all be doing that with our eyes, but it's going to be a very collaborative way of doing the Requiem, because I won't be the only one who's in charge at any moment. We'll be shifting around between soloists. If there's a solo moment, that person will be much more in charge of things. And if there's a bigger orchestral moment, then it'll fall to me to do more of the direction. But it really, no matter who's, you know, the one initiating something, it will be, there'll be a really high intense level of collaboration, which we're really excited about. Dr. Rosine Giles, our resident musicologist, mentioned to me in an interview that there's some things we do know about the Requiem, but there's more that we don't know about the Requiem. And one of those aspects is actually the performance situation that might have happened when it was finally completed. We really don't know fully what the intention was in terms of how many performers and whether there would have been a conductor at all. It's true that conductors were working at that time, but who knows how it might have actually, what Mozart was actually thinking when he composed it. So we're taking that as a stepping off point to bring our own ideas to the table and see what happens.
And that's pretty unusual, right, these days, to perform a work like that without a conductor?
It is pretty unusual. And I'll say it's especially unusual in vocal areas, in vocal performances, in my experience. And I think I understand why. There's a lot of logistics that go into, if you have an orchestra's worth of traffic to direct, when you add a choir to that, there's just so many details that it starts to be almost impossible to manage them all without one person really asserting themselves. And so this is definitely an experience and an experiment for us to see how this bears out. And I know that I wouldn't do this actually in many other places, but I have absolute 100% confidence in our fabulous vocalists at the festival that I really wanted to bring this to life with these people in this manner. It was really important to me and to Guy Fishman.
That's Aislinn Noske, violinist and co-artistic director of Bach Academy Charlotte. She and cellist Guy Fishman, the other co-artistic director, have planned the musical experiences of this year's Charlotte Bach Festival, which takes place May 30th through June 7th in locations around Charlotte. You can get a full schedule of concerts and events by going to bacharlotte.com. That's it for this week's Piedmont Arts. Remember, you can catch past episodes at wdav.org/podcasts. I'm David Borax.